Well, good morning, Heartland. It is good to see you. We are glad that you're here with us this weekend. If you're joining us online, we are glad you're tuned in as well. We've been in a series, or we're in a series now, talking about how to pace ourselves a little bit. I think we could all use a little of that. We started looking at this Sabbath principle last week, and Brian did a great job helping us to understand that the Sabbath is an invitation to slow my pace so that I can enjoy the race. The Sabbath really is this gift from God that he didn't have to give us Sabbath rest, but God didn't create slaves for work. He created people for joy. And that is what the Sabbath is all about, and it brings us back to that every week. So over the next few weeks, we're going to be applying this idea to several different areas of life. And today we're going to be looking at how family is important for this Sabbath rest. So we'll be looking at the importance of pacing ourselves together. So my wife and I celebrated our anniversary this past March, and we went to a nice restaurant. We do that at least once a year, and we always try to make the most out of it, make it a big celebration. So we went to this restaurant downtown called Flight, and what I love about it, it's my kind of restaurant, because at Flight, you don't have to order just one big dish. You can get several little dishes in a flight, so you get to try a lot of different things on their menu, and I love that, because I just love to taste things. I'm always the guy at the restaurants that's like, is there any way I can do like a sampler of everything on your menu instead of one meal? And so Flight kind of lets you do that. So me and my wife, we get into the restaurant. And it's nice, great atmosphere. And we sit down together and start reading over the menu. And we're the worst at deciding on what we want to eat. We don't make food decisions well. And so we looked at the menu for a long time. Everything looks so good. We finally decided, okay, we know what we want. And I got a steak flight, and then Chrissy got a seafood flight. And so they finally bring it out, and everything looks perfect. You know, it's like one of those cooking shows where every little plate, that's like, I get to eat that. I'm so excited. I really love food. I promise you, most illustrations I tell will have something to do with food. It's my favorite thing. But so we sit down, or we're sitting there, and this food comes out, and it looks amazing. And I cut into it, and the first plate that I tried was this braised beef and roasted vegetables. I didn't even know that I liked Brussels sprouts, but these had some kind of magic in them that was just amazing. I mean, so I tried some Brussels sprouts at another restaurant, and they were not good. So I don't know exactly what they did to these, but they were amazing. So I bit into that bite, and man, it was everything. It looked amazing, and it tasted amazing. It hit every spot right. But do you know the first thing I did after I took that bite was I had it loaded up on my fork and pushed in my wife's face? Because it was like, Chrissy, you have to try this. It's so good. I can't keep it to myself. You got to try this. And she's used to that because I do that to her all day long. We were joking about that this week. She says that I have a radar for finding her in the house with a spoon. And so I love to push spoons and forks in my wife's face. But so here's the moment right here is I pushed it in her face, and she's nice and gracious. And so she ate the bite. And so she tasted it. And I'm like, just sitting there looking at her. I'm like, yeah, how is it? And then I hear that moment where she's like, oh, wow. That's really good. And I'm like, yes. And it does something for me because I could enjoy it a lot by myself, but when my wife enjoyed it with me, man, it just made it a deeper enjoyment. And have you ever wondered why we are like that as human beings? We love to enjoy things with other people. And that's because we have been created by God to enjoy life in community. Also, we're created in the image of God. And I want you to think about this. Genesis chapter 2 is where the Sabbath principle really starts. It's where God shows himself doing that. And so God miraculously, in Genesis 2, is created the material universe by speaking the world into existence by his own word. And then he fashions it and perfects it and makes it amazing and beautiful in 6 days. And it says on the seventh day, he rested. And like we talked about last week, God doesn't just kick his feet up and go, man, that was a lot of work creating the universe, and I need a day off. That's not the point. The point was that God had finished the work, and it was perfect. And so he sat back in satisfaction and rested at how good the work was. Now, here's the important thing to remember about Genesis chapter 2, is God is not alone. God is never alone. God exists as one person, as one God in three persons. All the time. And so God is always in this community. So to understand the creation here in this Sabbath rest, we have to remember that God creates everything, and then the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit sit back together and they enjoy it in community. And there's this mysterious thing that I hope one day God will explain to us, but that the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit enjoy this beautiful display of glory, not just alone, but together. And so what we're going to look at with our time this morning is we're going to think about how our families, both our immediate families that we live with and our church family that you're going to live with for eternity, we're going to look at how they help us to enjoy Sabbath rest in our lives. So our bottom line for this morning is a family at its best is a family that rests. Now, that's not the message that our culture wants us to believe at all. Our culture wants us to believe that if we pace ourselves, that if we try to slow down at all, we're going to miss out. Your kids might not get into the college they want to get into if you don't involve them in enough stuff right now. That you might not get that promotion at work, and you might not get what you're looking for at your job if you don't go, go, go and push yourself. You might not be happy if you don't have all the stuff that you want right now. That you aren't worth anything if you don't achieve a lot in your life. If you don't keep up with every new thing coming out, you're going to be left out, or even at the worst of it all, you'll have a boring life if you slow down. There's this constant push for having more and more and more and going and going and going. And we feel it from all directions. And our culture tells us if you really want a good life, you have to make it for yourself. You have to make it happen. And we end up wearing ourselves out and our families out in the process, living these crazy, fast-paced lives where we don't ever have a time to slow down and enjoy anything. But then here comes the voice of God. And he says, stop listening. I know you. I know how you're created. I know what is best for you and your family. So listen to me. And the Sabbath is this call to push back against the culture for the glory of God and for the good of our families. It's this call to say we're not chasing what marketing experts are telling us we need. We're not trying to build some life or find some life on our own, but we are God's people and our families belong to him. And so we're going to put our faith and our trust in what God says and what God says we need and what he wants, because we know ultimately the only place we're going to find what we're really looking for is in him. He's the only place that peace and satisfaction is truly found. So this is a bold decision to resist this constant pressure from our culture. But I promise that God can and will transform our families and our churches when we decide to build them on him. When we say, my family's going to be about you and your purposes and eternity rather than just this world, God will powerfully work. Because a family at its best is a family that rests. So what we're going to do this morning, if you have your Bibles or if you have an electronic device, we're going to be in three different passages. The first one is Exodus 20. We're going to look at three different passages where God explains why the people of Israel were to keep the Sabbath, what it did for them as a community of people. Okay, so in these three passages, we're going to look at four characteristics of a family at its best. A family at its best, number one, remembers who God is. When we come to Exodus 20, it's really important to remember the people of Israel have been slaves in Egypt for 400 years. That means not one person that is alive in Israel or in Egypt, these Israelites, has any idea what life is like other than being a slave. You do what you're told. You work all the time. You never stop. You never slow. You go, go, go. If you don't do what you're supposed to do, they will kill you. That's the life they've known for 400 years. And then this mysterious God calls this man Moses to come and to lead his people out of slavery. And God does all these miraculous works to bring his people out to freedom. And then he leads them out to this mountain called Sinai. And they're standing before this mountain and the glory of God is all around. And these people are wondering, what is life going to be like with this new God? What is life going to be like? And God begins to unfold his law and what it's going to look like. And after working nonstop for all these years, knowing no other way of life, God tells his people this: remember the Sabbath. This is in the Ten Commandments. Number four, God says, one thing you got to understand as people is you need rest. So he says, take a day off. That would have been mind-blowing for these people to hear. After this lifestyle that they live, they hear, take a day off. It says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. Now listen to this part. You or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. So God says, this is not just an individualistic command. That's important, but he says, this is something I want the entire nation to do. You're going to slow down once a week, and you're going to observe this Sabbath together, and his families, and everyone in your household. He says, because this is an important time and a holy time. Now, here's why in verse 11. For in 6 days, the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So what does that tell us about the Sabbath day? It tells us that one of the reasons that families need this Sabbath rest in their life is because we need to remember who God is. That we need to be reminded and remind one another that he is the creator. That he alone is God and that we are not. Now, why do we need to be reminded that we aren't God? Because what happens is when we forget this, and we do this all the time, when we forget that God alone is God, that he alone is the one who's in control of the universe and this state and this country and my life and my family, that he alone is God, when we forget that, we start to live like we are in control. We start to live like we're the ones that are calling all the shots, like we're the ones that are making everything happen. And God gives this Sabbath command and says, once a week, Israel, I want you to hear this message. You are not God. I alone am the Lord who created everything. And so he says, rest. Now, my kids, they do a lot of interesting things. And so a few months ago, they were playing out in my car. I don't know if your kids like to do this. My kids like to just play in my car. Like, there's nothing on or anything. They're just like, can we play in your car? There's nothing to do or anything. But so they're in there playing, no big deal. I'm, you know, keeping an eye on them. But then I noticed the play inside of the car has gotten really organized. Like, nobody's jumping around. Nobody's doing anything crazy. I'm like, what is going on? So I walk over to the car, and they're sitting there, both of them. They're seatbelted in. They got sunglasses on, and it's like a family trip. I was like, okay, so they're going on vacation somewhere, and that's exactly what they were doing. They were playing vacation, and it was really cute to watch them in the car, you know, acting like they were going on a vacation. Let me tell you what would not be cute is if my kids started the car and tried to drive somewhere. That would not end well. It would be horrific. Honestly, I have a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old. I don't think they could get out of the driveway, so I'm still safe for now. But let me ask you this. When we live our lives like we are in control, we create so many messes. We are kids that can't get the car out of the driveway, yet we try to take the control away from the Lord and say, I got this. I got this. Some of you this morning are in a relationship mess because you said, no, I got this. I can handle this. I can figure this out on my own. Some of you are in a financial disaster because you said, I can take care of this. I'm good. Some of you are going through a major storm in life, and it's difficult, and it's overwhelming, and you don't know how you're going to make it, but on top of all that, there's this pressure that you got to keep going and be strong and all this stuff, and maybe right now, the reason you're feeling so overwhelmed is because you're trying to carry it all on your shoulders, and God says, what if you'd give me the keys? What if there was a time in your life every week where you had people that could remind you, I'm the one who drives. I'm the one who controls it. I'm the one and the only one who can. So we say, God, you alone are God, and I'm not. And as families and as a church, the Sabbath refreshes us, and it refuels us, and it refocuses us on who God really is and on who we really are. A family at its best remembers who God is. The second thing is in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 15. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 15. The second characteristic is a family at its best celebrates what God has done. A family at its best celebrates what God has done. There's this mentality that we can all get stuck in our lives really easily. We begin to start working for things instead of from things. We begin to start living for something rather than from something. What I mean is that we start living from this vantage point that there is something out there that we don't have yet, but that we need. And so we work and we live to get that one thing. It's the it. You know, maybe it could be a title at your job. And you say, if I just had it, if I just had that title, that position, then I would get the respect that I'm looking for. That's what would really satisfy me. And so we work for it. Maybe it for you is a certain lifestyle that you want to live. So you say, if I could have that house, have that car, go on those vacations, have these things, man, that's what would really do it for me. That's what I'm after. And so you work and you live for that. Maybe it for you is having a perfect family. And say, man, we've got this perfect family, and there's this weight and this pressure on your life to work and to try so hard to keep everything moving towards that perfect family, and everything you're doing, you're wearing yourselves out saying, like, if we can just have it, that's what's finally going to satisfy us. But whatever it is, the issue is that it doesn't exist. It's like a mirage. The closer you think you're getting to it, you're working, you're spending yourself, you're saying, just one more weekend. That's all it's going to take. Just one more weekend and we'll be good. But it never comes. And it is always out there. And the closer you get to it, it just keeps moving away because it's not real. It is not out there somewhere. And that's exactly what God is trying to show here in this verse. He says, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So in this verse, God says, as God's people, you don't have to live and work for it anymore. You don't have to live for something. You can live from something. See, the people of Israel that were in Egypt, I mean, they had never done anything good. They had never done anything right to earn God's favor, to earn his attention. They were nobodies. They were slaves. They were oppressed. They had nothing to offer God, but then God showed up. They had done absolutely nothing, and then God showed up by his grace. And God said, I'm going to do the work for you. I'm going to lead you out. I'm going to save you. I'm going to make you a people. And it's all by my grace. And he said, what we have to understand is that sets you free from this constant temptation to work and to live and to strive and to spend yourself for it. God says, I am it. I am everything you need. I'm ending the search right here, right now. So God says, that is what the Sabbath is about, is stop and remember that I've done the work. I've made you my people. I have finished the work. And when these people celebrated the Sabbath together, it was a constant reminder that they could celebrate that God was gracious, that God had done the work they could never do themselves, so that they could not work for something, but from something. Let me kick it to the New Testament for a second. In the end of that verse, it says that God led them out by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. The reason that we can enjoy this rest in our lives, and I'm not talking about like sleep or like a day a week, I'm talking about like a rest of the soul for you and your family. The reason you can rest is because 2,000 years ago, this same God who created the universe stretched his arms out on a cross. And the mighty hand of the Father nailed his own son to that cross, and he shed his blood, and he died, and he rose in victory. And Jesus said, it is finished. You don't have to work for something anymore. It is finished. I have done the work. And then just like in Genesis chapter 2, now when God looks at my life and looks at your life, he is satisfied. And he looks at your life and he says, it is good. It is very good. And if you're like me, you're thinking about the life you've lived and said, how can that be possible, God? He says, because I am a God of grace. I'm a God who gives you what you don't deserve. And so we as a people need regular time in our lives to remind each other of that, to celebrate that together. We worship the Lord because of what he has done. We remind one another it's God's grace, not our hard work, that gives us the lives that we have, the families we have, the things that we have, everything that we have. A couple of simple ways to do this as a family and as a church. Very, very simply, one is worship together regularly. Make this a time in your family where you worship together. I mean, we just sang some amazing songs, and just hearing you sing and watching you worship filled me up with the grace of God. Man, to remind my soul, the work is done. Man, what a beautiful name that I am set free to live from grace. So good. Be involved in a missional community. That just opens you up to more people and community in your life that can speak that truth into you to celebrate God's grace in your family and in theirs. Serve the church together. Now that sounds like, well, I'm not really resting if I do that. But it's not about, the point here is that you're receiving grace and you're giving grace to other people. That's what serving is. I'm telling another sinner more about grace. And they're telling me about grace. And we do that for one another. And then this one, I love this. Practice prayerful gratitude as a family. Let there be some time in your week where you just slow down enough to thank God together. Man, you want to talk about people that understand the gospel are grateful people. People who understand what's been done for them by God are people who say thank you a lot. So as a family, take time to thank God for what he's done. Thank God for what he's given you. It's so powerful and it's so needed to teach one another to be filled with gratitude. A family at its best is a family that rests and celebrates what God has done. Let's flip back over one more place, Exodus chapter 31, verse 13. Exodus chapter 31, verse 13. The third point is that a family at its best trusts what God is doing. Family at its best trusts what God is doing. And that's really the heart of the Sabbath. It's not about a particular day or time or this or that. It's about having moments in our lives where we can trust what God is doing, to realign ourselves with who he is and what he's doing, that he's the one who will provide, that he's the one who gives us strength. We're trusting in his work, trusting what he can do for our family, what he can do for our church. Verse 13 says, "And the Lord said to Moses, 'You are to speak to the people of Israel and say, above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you.'" God has chosen you, and he has taken your life, and he has set it aside, set it apart. That's what the word sanctify means. He set it apart for himself. So through the Sabbath, God is saying, this is a sign that you belong to him. Yesterday morning, my daughter was sitting in my lap, and you never know what's going to come out of her mouth. So she's playing with my wedding ring. She said, "I'm going to take your wedding ring off so you won't be married anymore." And now, why she said that, I have no idea. Like, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to lose a daddy or, you know, not have a mommy and a daddy? But anyway, so she said that to me, and then I just looked at her and I said, "Sweetheart, that ring is a reminder that I'm married. But I'm married whether that's on or not. But it's a constant reminder that I'm married." And God is saying that here. This is a sign between me and you. He says, when you take this time, it is a sign, a reminder to trust in me, that you belong to me, that everything you need, I will provide, that I will be there like no one else can, that I am the one that you really need. Trust me. God said, "I know the number of the hairs on your head. I know what you need tomorrow. I know what you need in your family. I know what you need at work. I know how to take care of you. Trust me." And the Sabbath is this way to do that. Now, I don't know what filled up your week last week or what's coming this week, but this morning, God's word is telling you that you can and should have a regular time to slow down together as a family and with your church family to remember that God has got you. I wonder if this morning, if we just need to stop for a second and just remember that. Whatever you're going through, whatever is going on in your lives, just stop and say, God has got this. He really is big enough to handle it. He really is the one who created everything. He is the one who rescued me and saved me, and now he's the one who cares for me forever. A family at its best trusts what God is doing. Let's do something real quick. Let's everybody take a deep breath and let it out slowly. That just feels good. Probably been talking too fast. Let's do it one more time. Did you know God gives you every breath you breathe? Every one of them. Every beat of your heart comes from him. Right now, every breath, trust me. I care about the breaths you breathe. I care about everything about your life. Now do this, if you'll indulge me for one more second. Take a deep breath and hold it this time. All right. Now while you're holding that breath, try to go as long as you can. Don't hurt yourself. Don't pass out. I'm not liable for anything that happens. But imagine right now you're going to get up and you're going to start sprinting while you're holding that breath, that feeling you've got. You're going to sprint as far and as fast as you can. How far do you think you're going to make it? You're not going to make it very far because your body needs air to breathe. You can't go at this 100% pace without breathing. Your body tells you that. Now, if you're still holding your breath, you can let it out. I don't want anyone to get hurt, but kudos for that. When you think about your pace in your life, God is saying, trusting me is like breathing. That you've got to take time to remind yourself how much we need to depend on the Lord. And then it's like taking a breath saying, Lord, I can trust you. Lord, I know that you've got this. Take time to breathe. Trust the Lord. Now, here's the question we need to ask ourselves this morning. Do we trust the Lord enough to pursue rest and worship more than what this culture tells us we need? What if it means you have to drive that hoopty a little bit longer so that you can be home next weekend? What if it means maybe your kids have to go to junior college for a couple years so that you can spend more time as a family without killing yourselves or killing one another? What if you're not going to be as popular? What if you're not going to be as successful? Do you still trust the Lord? What if you're just going to be average? God is saying, trust me. Am I enough for you? That's what the Sabbath brings us back to over and over and over. See, the Sabbath is about building your family on what matters most. It realigns you, it refocuses you to build your family on eternity rather than on this world. And when we stop our regular busy lives and we choose to refocus on the Lord and trusting him, it means that we believe this world is not our home, that there's something better, there's something greater for us than just chasing the rat race. Things in this life are temporary. No matter how much we get or how successful we are, the Bible calls our greatest achievements a vapor. Here 1 second and gone the next. But when we build our lives and our families around Christ and his kingdom, and we trust in his wisdom and what he says and where he's calling us, and we follow him, Jesus said, you're storing up treasures for yourself where neither moth nor rust can break in, where no thief can steal, where nobody can separate it from you, and you're building your life on something that matters, and you're building your children's lives on something that matters, and we as a church are building our church family on something that matters. That's what we need to be a part of. Jim Elliot once said this. I love this quote. We'll put it on the screen. He is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose. That's what Exodus 31 is all about. God's telling his people, you need to remember to trust me, to know that I am everything you need, to depend on him, to enjoy him, to love him. That's why a family at its best is a family that rests, because a family that rests is a family that trusts in the Lord, takes time to focus on trusting the Lord. There's one last characteristic, and it's a short one and a simple one. I didn't even put a Bible verse with it. Simply, a family at its best is life-giving. At the end of the day, making room in our lives for resting together, this worshipful rest, man, it's just good. It refuels you. It refocuses you. It builds you up. Man, it is fun. It can even be fun. It should be fun. When I stop and I look at my kids, do you know what they remind me? They remind me that people matter more than my job. When I come and I gather with you week after week, you remind me that eternity matters more than this world. And we need to hear that. We need to hear that over and over and over again. That's life-giving. So here's just a few kind of ideas. I just thought some practical ideas would be fun. I'll try not to get on any soapboxes. I'll just say them. But some things you can do with your family to kind of start incorporating this. What do we do other than come to church together? Here's a few ideas to have some Sabbath rest. One thing is eat together as a family. Statistically, families just aren't doing that like they used to. And I would encourage you, be a family that just eats together. So many great things happen when we look each other in the eye over a meal. You know, Jesus spent, I believe, something like half his ministry just eating with people and just hanging out over a meal. So important. Eat together as a family sometime during your week. Take a social media and electronic break sometime this week. And it's getting harder and harder to just put our phones down and remember that, hey, life is happening right here too. And so let's be a people, like try to incorporate that maybe. Let's just take a break. Me and my wife have recently started doing this at night because some days it's just crazy and it's like, I feel like I haven't talked to you this week. And so, man, we just have this kind of no electronics, you know, let's don't turn TV on, don't turn the phone on. Let's just talk, hang out. And it has been so life-giving for our family, especially for our marriage. And it's just good taking a break. Take a walk together. Other than today, the weather has been amazing. And it's going to be pretty amazing for a little while at least. So while it's nice, take a walk together. And here's an idea. Tell your kids and plan on as a family, hey, when we're not talking or something, like prayer walk. Like you're just walking and enjoying the day. Teach your family how to just enjoy that and to pray for one another. Thank God in those moments. Pray for your neighbors. Pray for your neighborhood. Take a walk together. Prayer walk even. Do something you enjoy together. Do something that's just life-giving, that you just love to do, that your family loves to do. And one other that Brian said last week that I love is rest and do nothing. Just have some nothing time in your life. And we have this time when we can get it. We try our best to have some time during our Sabbath rest where it's like quiet time at our house. Like there's not running around, there's not yelling, there's not a lot of noise. It's just quiet. It's one of the only times in our week that it's quiet. Man, it's so good to just hear nothing sometimes. Just have some silence in your life. And so you can, as a family, kind of have some times to rest and do nothing. And you can sleep during that time too. Which if you're like me, I don't sleep enough. And so that's always a great thing to add into your schedule. The point is to slow down together as a family and as a church to remind each other that God is the true source of joy and life. That it all comes from him. So really, whatever you want to do as a family, there's a billion things you can do, just a few ideas. But it boils down to these two things. These are your action steps for this morning. Where do we go from here? Number one, prioritize rest and worship in your family. Make it a priority. Make it a priority. It is how we were designed by God, not to go at 100% capacity all the time, but to have moments in our lives where we can rest, refuel, and refocus. So prioritize rest and worship. That's also going to mean you're going to have to defend your time as a family. People want to use your time for whatever they want to do. It's not necessarily like a huge selfish problem. It's just people want you to come do stuff, and you're going to get pulled from all kinds of directions. You might have to tell somebody no. That's a hard lesson that I've had to learn over the past few months. It's just how to tell people no, I can't do that. And the more I do that, the more I'm starting to realize, man, it feels good to just rest sometimes. And so don't be afraid to prioritize rest and worship. Plan on it. Count on it. It's going to be there. Now, if you're in a season of life where that doesn't work, you know, I'd say sometimes life is like that. But as best you can, try to work in that time and prioritize it. We need it. And out of that, there's one other thing, is find a rhythm that works for you and your family. Sundays might not be your best day to have a Sabbath rest. So you might be able to come and worship here with us. But past that, who knows, you might have to work on Sunday afternoons, a lot of different things. But have a time in your week. Romans 14 tells us, Paul says, it's not the day or the time that matters. It's the intention. And it's having these moments together where we just say, I'm going to slow down. So it could be a Saturday, it could be a Friday, it could be whatever time in the week that works for you and your family, whatever it looks like. But be intentional about it. Find a rhythm that works for you. Because Jesus bought us this future with his own blood so that we don't have to build our lives and our families on this world's pace. We can build them on an eternal pace, knowing that everything we need truly is in Jesus, that he alone satisfies. That is what the Sabbath as a family is all about. I'll get you guys just to bow your heads for a moment. We're going to move into a time of response now. And maybe as we've talked about resting as a family today, we need to take a step back. And you're just sitting there thinking to yourself, Chris, I have no rest at all. Even when I stop to do nothing, my mind is racing. My heart is racing. I'm not sleeping well. I don't have this peace in my life. And I don't know what to do about it. I feel like I'm always chasing it, but I'm never finding it. I'm worn out. Jesus said, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. He wasn't talking about a rest, like just give your body some rest. He was talking about a rest of the soul. You'll come to him and find the end of all your pursuits. So if that's you this morning, you're saying, man, I'm chasing everything, but I've got nothing. Jesus is telling you, come to me, and through a personal relationship, let me transform your life. He'll forgive your sin, and he'll give you a brand new way to live as one of his people. So if that's you this morning, we want to just give you an opportunity to respond to that. It's as simple as starting a conversation with the Lord and praying a simple prayer. So I want you to repeat this after me. That's you this morning. Jesus, I don't have that rest in my life, but I know that I need it. I believe that you died for me and that you rose again and that you are really what I have been created for. You are the one that I really need. I need your peace. I need your joy. I need what only you can give me. So forgive me this morning. Change my life. I surrender to you. In your name I pray. If you'll keep your heads bowed, if that was you this morning, no one's looking around, not even me. If you'll just slip your hand in the air, this is a sign not for us as a church, but for between you and God that, Lord, I surrendered my life to you. So if that's you, will you just raise your hand up as a sign that you are giving your life to the Lord? Now we just want to pray together as we move into this time of singing. Father, thank you that there is rest for our families. Thank you that you are a gracious God who tells us we don't have to work ourselves to death. We don't have to look for something, but we have found everything in Jesus. I pray that you would help us build our families, our lives, our church, on what matters, on eternity, and not on the things of this world. God, we need you. Would you move now as we sing and as we continue to celebrate your grace? We pray that in Jesus' name.